Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
U.S. Secretary of Commerce Wilbur Ross has managed to avoid the spotlight inside a cabinet rife with ethics scandals and resignations. But new reporting from Forbes reveals allegations that he and his former private equity firm wrongly siphoned or stole money from former colleagues and clients. Through interviews with 21 of Ross's former associates, Forbes reporter Dan Alexander uncovered lawsuits, reimbursements, and fines that add up to over $120 million dating back to 2005. Dan joins me now to talk about these findings. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good. So you do say in this report that Ross is potentially, quote, among the biggest grifters in American history. That's a big claim to make, Dan. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we were very careful about making it. But if you take $120 million and you say, okay, well, even if half of that is true, so call it $60 million. If somebody stole $60 million from a bank, they would be one of the most famous or infamous bank robbers that exists. If somebody stole $50 million in a white-collar scheme, they would be among the biggest Wall Street crooks that exist. Now, we don't know if these things are true because many of them were settled beforehand, oftentimes for millions of dollars, and they didn't go through to trial. But again, if you take the idea that even half of them might be true, then you're already there.
What led you to want to investigate Wilbur Ross? In this investigation specifically, your reporting cites that Ross's former private equity firm was a huge part of the contention here. Was it that or was it him? What was the tipping point that said, we want to find out what's going on here?
It originally started about a year ago. You know, Wilbur Ross had been on the Forbes billionaires lists for years. And so I cover Trump and the people around him at Forbes. And so as part of that, it was my job to figure out how much he was worth for our list. And when we started looking at the numbers, we realized that what he had been telling us for years did not jive with what he was now telling the federal government in terms of the assets that he owned. And so I reached out to him and I said, hey, you know, I'm just trying to understand this discrepancy. And that's when he explained to me, well, you know, I had made a major transfer of assets just before I took office, and that left more than $2 billion worth of assets off of my disclosure form. Well, it turned out that the more that we looked at that, the more that we realized that that does not appear to be true. And in fact, he never had the billions of dollars that he had been claiming to us in the first place. And it seems kind of silly, you know, why would a guy who's worth hundreds of millions of dollars be one worth a few billion dollars? And it is kind of silly, but it goes deeper than that. You know, if you're on that list, then it's easier for you to attract investors' money. So there are investors who I've talked to who said, you know, I asked them why they invested with Wilbur Ross. And I said, look, you have to look at a guy's track record. And that includes both in business and in his personal life. So if somebody's worth billions of dollars, then you're more likely to put your money in with him. If you put your money in with him, then he has to charge you for that. So he figured out a way to turn fake assets into real money.
Now, you mentioned briefly about his past legal battles, but give us a sense of what his past legal battles have looked like and how they've generally ended.
They sort of fall into one of two categories. The first is with former colleagues, and the typical pattern there is somebody leaves W.L. Ross, his private equity firm, and after they leave, they say that Wilbur has either tried to cut them out of interests or outright stolen them. And so they hold on to interest in the funds. Once they leave, Wilbur takes those interests, takes them down to zero, puts them in his own pocket. Those are the allegations. Then the second category is for the clients. And for the clients, it's a little bit more complicated. Basically, the sort of oxygen for any private equity fund is something called management fees. So if you have $2 billion worth of assets that you're managing, then typically you would charge 2% of that a year. And that helps you run the lights, pay the salaries, you know, get a nice lifestyle for yourself. It's not the huge, huge money that you can get, but it's the money you can count on. And Wilbur was charging a lot in management fees, and so as a result, he promised his investors that he would give them basically rebates for those management fees for different things that they would do with the investments. If they were overseeing the investments and took on some expenses, then he would basically say, okay, you don't have to pay us management fees for that private jet that I took to a board meeting or something like that. And ultimately, he was not giving back as much money as he should. So, you know, the SEC looked into it, the investors looked into it, And they ended up paying back tens of millions of dollars and also paying an SEC fine. In the SEC settlement, they did not admit or deny wrongdoing, which is typical in these such things.
So Ross's job is to improve domestic commerce and negotiate on behalf of the United States. Have there been any implications, conflicts of interest as a result of this?
Absolutely. So, you know, before I published this story, I did another story focusing on as many conflicts of interest. Among them are the fact that for most of last year, he remained a business partner with the government of China while he was negotiating trade deals between the United States and China. You know, these are the two largest economies in the world. The stakes in these negotiations are enormous. And the idea that he could have had any sort of personal motivation in it is, you know, enough to make ethics people go crazy.
So we did reach out to the Secretary's office for comment, and I'm going to read you what they said, and I'm quoting here. The anonymously sourced Forbes story is based on false rumors, innuendo, and unverifiable claims. The fact remains that no regulator has made any of these accusations against the Secretary. This rehash of old stories is clearly the result of a personal vendetta. The baseless claims made in this story were well publicized long ago and are not news. Your response.
So I can go through that for a while, but we'll start with the beginning of it, saying that it's based on anonymous sources. Look, there are four former employees of Wilbur Ross who are actively pursuing litigation in court right now against him. It's hard to make a less anonymous accusation than to file a lawsuit. You're literally putting your name in court documents for posterity next to allegations against someone. The idea that there's no news here is not true. You know, the story breaks the fact that Wilbur Ross secretly settled a case that was for millions of dollars with his former number two employee just 2 weeks ago while he was Secretary of Commerce.
And what does it mean if these accusations are legitimate? I mean, could we see Wilbur Ross having any sort of trial or penalty as a result of all this? Or are we still looking at more settlements?
So there's still some ongoing litigation. If history serves, then likely those will end in settlements. And, you know, settlements, you can't draw clear conclusions from, either that it means that he's, you know, did it or didn't do it. And you also don't get all of the evidence. So any of these cases on their own, you couldn't say, okay, this definitely means that he stole that money or anything like that. But if you put them all together and you look at the amount of money, over $120 million, you look at the amount of people and the consistency of the allegations, it's hard to ignore the pattern.
That's Dan Alexander, reporter for Forbes. Thanks for talking us through this.
Yeah, thank you.